and unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Good morning. I think maybe if somebody could turn this a little bit more towards me so that I'm not at a weird angle to Lisa.
You're at a good angle right now.
Oh, okay. Then let's not mess with it. From my view, it looks like a weird angle. So sometimes I'm overwhelmed by a sense of fear, and feel like I'm just made of fear. That's all there is, and so you know, I'll lay awake at night and it'll feel like, wow, that's my only emotion. And I remember that Lovecraft said that fear is the deepest emotion. And then once I told that to my brother, Christopher, who's a horror writer, and he said, I don't think it's an emotion. He said, I think it's deeper than that, like something primal. So what is that all about? So because I'm very familiar with fear, today I want to talk about the gift of fearlessness. So traditionally, the gift of fearlessness is one of three gifts. The gift of material things, the gift of fearlessness is second, and the gift of Dharma is third. Fred Anderson had a little poem illustrating the traditional view of fearlessness. He didn't write it, but it's in Being Upright, which is a great book by him about the precepts. He writes that in Birdfoot Grandpa, poet Joseph Brukhak writes about practicing giving fearlessness. And if anyone's interested, I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, but Joseph Brukhak is spelled Bruchac. So there might be a ha in there. Anyway, Birdfoot Grandpa goes like this. The old man must have stopped our car 2 dozen times to climb out and gather into his hands the small toads blinded by our lights and leaping live drops of rain. The rain was falling, a mist about his white hair, and I kept saying, you can't save them all, accept it. Yeah, get back in, we've got places to go. That leathery hands full of wet brown life, knee deep in the summer roadside grass, he just smiled and said, they have places to go too. So that's the traditional idea of fearlessness. The gift of fearlessness is to save beings from being trapped or save beings from having kings protecting their subjects traditionally also. That's one form of giving fearlessness, saving creatures from fire or whatnot, or rain in this case, because they have places to go to. Another form of fearlessness, Rev Anderson writes, is to implicitly or explicitly recognize another person as Buddha, showing them respect and appreciation in such a way as to foster their self-respect and self-confidence. And it can also be literally demonstrating fearlessness for the education and encouragement of others. So that's about being upright and joyous and being authentic. I found this nice summary of giving fearlessness put forward by Red Clay Sangha in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm tempted to say they really need a Sangha there. sometimes. Well, Georgia, you know, but not to get into politics. The writer of this is Cheri Zimmer, who is labeled as an administrator. I think she forgot to mention she's a bodhisattva based on what she said. Or at least she's growing into one like we all are. She writes that giving fearlessness, besides the traditional views of fearlessness, which I just spoke of, she says, we can also give this gift by not appearing frightening, but by behaving in moral, ethical, and generous ways. We can protect those we can, such as by watching the door and clock during meditation for our friends. And she talks about we being dependable and not having people fear for our safety. Another way of giving fearlessness is by being love, showing people, practicing loving kindness as a form of metta, because one of our big spirits is not being loved, right? Being present with fear is also a very important way of giving fearlessness. And she gives the example of being present when awaiting medical tests. Like she called her mother to tell her that she was being tested for cancer for the third time. And without even waiting for her to say anything, her mother said, I'll be there. So even if you can't do anything about a person's fear, just being there for them is giving a gift of fearlessness. And finally, being an example is a way of encouraging people in your practice to be fearless. We show them our perseverance, resilience, and survival as an example. Being open about our own fears and courage in the face of suffering, especially sickness, old age, and death, can be a great source of fearlessness for others. And simply continuing to sit in meditation. So I found this quite inspiring. And as an example of my in my own life, it's sometimes it feels like it's the fear can feel so heavy that it couldn't possibly be mine. You know, it feels like it's not just this moment that something terrible is going to happen, but that sometime in the future something terrible is going to happen that'll affect everyone around me. Some kind of sickness, some kind of something that happens as I get older, as I feel, you know, my body can't do the things it used to do. Yes.
Can I wait? Well, maybe a good example is the fires.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Things we can't control. Yeah, yeah. Anything you stay up late, you know, worrying about, or if it hits you in the middle of the day, like it does for me sometimes too. You know, that's a way to practice with fear and to give the gift of fearlessness. It's and it just can feel like it's so overwhelming if you start thinking about yourself and thinking about something that affects everyone, like the fires. Or what would happen without you if you're suddenly incapacitated. It almost feels like to me that it's fear itself, or fear of maybe sickness, old age, and death, to use the turn of phrase in Buddhism, which means everything. Basically, that's how I interpret sickness, old age, and death. It's very visual because you can picture, you know, sickness, you can picture something about old age, you can picture something regarding death, but really it's like the whole universe is weighing on you. And that's how I feel sometimes when this can't be just about me. You know, it feels so heavy. And I think that's true. I think there is something about it being really deep, a really deep fear. But what do you do? What do you do when you feel that way? Well, I think there is a link between the traditional way of seeing fear as saving creatures from harm and being an example and being with fear, being present for fear, And this will sound like a strange example, maybe, but what about when you save the spider from the bathtub? Have you ever noticed that they don't just look at you gratefully, and they don't just, you know, sit there calmly and say, "Oh, great, great, you're saving me from the bathtub. You know, you're letting me out. I appreciate that." If I haven't used a towel, sometimes they bite me. You know, so you know, but they're not exactly grateful. But I think that's kind of what's happening when we really let ourselves feel the fear, is that in ourselves, we're not that grateful about it. We actually think we're not supposed to feel so fearful. And the just the words themselves, the gift of fearlessness or no fear, maybe might mislead us if we haven't looked into ourselves deeply, if we haven't studied fear, if we're in a panic state, even if we know all this in our heads, maybe we're not in a state where we see that fear is not something to itself be feared. And I have a little quirky example. I hope you can all hear this. This is from Jacob's Ladder. I'm going to hope there's no ads. this is from YouTube. Jacob's Ladder, if you've seen it, and if you haven't anyway, there's a scene in which basically a veteran of, I'm not sure if it was clear that it was Vietnam or what war it was, but he was a veteran of a recent war, and he's really troubled by images of just terrible images. And right when he's at his chiropractor is helping him, and he cracks his back, and suddenly the veteran gets, Jacob gets images of demons, and he says, he tells his chiropractor about it, and the chiropractor supposedly is quoting Meister Eckhart, but I looked it up, and scholars who care about Jacob's Ladder said, well, it's in the spirit, but we don't think he ever said that. Anyway, who cares? Here's a little, I'm going to actually let you have the chiropractor's response when Jacob says, "I just saw demons and you're an angel," something like that.
"If you're frightened of dying and then you're holding on, you'll see devils tearing your life away. But if you've made your peace, then the devils are really angels freeing you from the earth. It's just a matter of how you look at it, that's all. So don't worry, okay? Okay?
Could you hear that? Could you hear that okay, Lisa? Oh, okay. I'll try to get it as close as I can. He said, so the chiropractor said, sometimes if you're holding on to life too tightly, you'll feel like you see devils trying to tear it away from you. But if you take another perspective, you'll see their angels freeing you from the earth. It's just a matter of how you look at it. Don't worry about it." Pretty fair, yes. Fair enough. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what is that? Does that apply to us? Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think that when we're present for fear, it can help us. Freeing from the earth may sound like, for Meister Eckhart, who was a Christian mystic, I mean, it might sound like it's kind of about a traditional way of freeing yourself from the earthly body. But I think another way of looking at it is that it's a way of freeing ourselves from clinging to ourselves, from clinging to our ideas of what we are, our ideas that we shouldn't get old, we shouldn't die, we shouldn't get sick. We shouldn't change, in other words. We shouldn't change. But being with it changes it. Changes our perspective. We can free ourselves from clinging. Zazen, when we sit in Zazen, that's that's a way to do it. I have another example of myself. I was, I had been giving a lot of thought to what I was, to my talk and to how I interact with fear, and had been doing a lot of driving Zazen while we were on a trip with my wife. And so I asked her, if you came up with a made-up Japanese word for driving Zazen, she speaks Japanese. I said, what would it be? And she said, Utenzen. That's driving Zen, driving Zazen. So after I had been doing some driving Zazen, I was it was her turn to drive, and I was in the passenger seat, and I we'd gone through some fires. Speaking of that, we'd gone near the fires in Shasta and had actually seen some on the side of the road. And so later on, I guess that was why fear was with me. We'd gotten past that, but I started to feel it deeply inside. And I sort of wanted to like bring myself in to like protect myself. You know how you tend to do that when you're feeling fear, you want to protect yourself. You want to protect whatever is the fear. It was sort of a nameless thing. I wasn't thinking about the fires, but it was there. And so I thought, what would happen if I didn't? You know, I was in the driver, I was in the passenger seat. I could have done anything, but I said, I'll just sit here with it, let it wash over me. And I feel like that actually is very refreshing, to let the fear wash over one. It's not something we need to protect. It's when we're sitting in Zazen, when we sit upright instead of protecting ourselves. It's the same. And think of that spider in the bathtub. Maybe the hand of Zazen is saving us from the bathtub, to be a little bit less, poetic, you know, instead of the devils and angels. We're like, is it a hand to crush us, or is it the hand of Zazen? And we can sit upright for it. And to me, I thought about this not just at that time, but I thought about this before, that what if instead of this heaviness of the universe, of old age and death falling upon my shoulders and crushing me, what if I just stayed with those things I fear? Are they so heavy? No, actually, without that, they're much lighter. It reminds me of when I was a kid, and my younger brother, who became the horror writer, Chris, was born, and he was so young that he couldn't hold up his own head and couldn't make a fist with his hands. And my mother told me how to hold him, just hold his head gently in my hand, and you know, make sure his head is supported while I. Maybe that's how we can approach our fear. I feel like that image instantly gave me the gift of fearlessness. So when we can bring that gift of fearlessness to everyone. If it's a little colicky baby, you can rock it through the night. Don't worry if you are losing sleep because of your fear. Just be with it. And be with your friends in the Zendo when it's your turn to watch the clock, or to be Doan, or to be Kokyo, or to be Jisha. We have a lot of performance anxiety, right? Or when it's your turn to give a lecture like Mary asked me to do. Yeah. A lot of crazy fears come up. So I think that's all I had to say. Except to also note that in Zazen, it's not a paradise. You know, I've heard many people talk about this. I haven't experienced this so much myself, but I've heard of a lot of people say they experience dizziness or nausea because they're not used to sitting so upright. And maybe it's like the knees that hurt, you know, a distraction. Maybe somewhat physical from not being used to sitting, maybe both. But if you trust it, Trust that the fear isn't going to hurt you. Trust that it's going to teach you something. Teach you to change, not hold on so much. And to cradle that thing that you fear. It's not your enemy. So we'll take comments or questions, even though we're sort of at time. Zach.
The gift of fearlessness.
Well, both.
Yeah. Makes me think of, on one hand, slap, it's not about you, mm-hmm. you know? Like, be generous with other people, and it'll help you too. And so I had this experience this week. There's an older gentleman whose son lives with him, kind of at the end of our street, like four blocks down. And he has this tiny little chihuahua that's 17 years old. And the other day, I took my camera to walk downtown and take pictures of people and stuff. And he was out there, and Tina was hobbling around. And I said, why don't you pick Tina up? I'll take a picture of you. And I took one picture with good light that wasn't very good. And then the first one I took was too dark. So I had him turn the other way. But the dark one, I kind of gussied it up, and it's like this amazing picture of him just, and I should mention, he has like a big bushy beard and crazy hair. He almost looks like a homeless guy or something. And I have the feeling nobody else in the neighborhood is friendly with him. But so I bought a frame, and I had the picture printed, and I walked down to his house, you know, a week or two later to give it to him. And he was, like, shocked that anyone would give him a picture of him with his dog. And we're talking, and the son's there. And they tell me that, oh, did you know that Tina died?
That's why.
We had to put her down on Sunday. And I'm going, wow, I didn't know that. But that makes giving him the photo even more meaningful, at least to me, and I think for him. And so a couple days later, I was driving home, and I saw him. He sort of sits out on a porch, and he gave me a big wave, which he never does. So I think I kind of made a new... He was already... I was friendly with him, but now I think it's on a different level. And I could tell a few more stories like that. But... So maybe being generous with people is a way of helping them, but I think it helps you too.
Yeah, and I particularly like about that story. Could the rest of you hear everything Zach said? Good. I particularly like that you weren't particularly trying to be generous. You were just doing what you did. Mm-hmm. And probably really helped him with the gift of fearlessness through, because grief always involves a lot of fear. You know, there's whether you're conscious of it or not, it's under there, because that's a big change when you're grieving mm-hmm. for someone. Kelly.
Just to kind of go back to the very beginning of your talk, the gift of material, what was it?
A material thing. So there's three traditional gifts: the gift of material things, the gift of fearlessness, and the gift of the Dharma. Mm-hmm. So
material things seems like the odd duck in there.
Oh yeah.
what do you have an interpretation of that?
Well, I gave a talk where I talked a lot about giving some time ago that you can find recorded, and I'm pretty sure Mary's talked about it too, but I recommend to you Dogen's fascicle on giving, four methods of mindfulness. I'm not sure if I'm remembering the title right, okay. But he talks about you can give, he's, you know, the way Dogen is, he says you can give something that doesn't belong to you. You can give flowers on a distant hill. You can give, a king gave his beard as medicine. Mm. So it's not just the obvious things.
Yeah.
It's as opposed to something more intangible. But the tangible for Dogen can be intangible.
Yeah. So it's tricky.
Yeah, it is tricky. Yeah. I'll email what the name of that fascicle is later.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so we're past time, so unless there's, as Mary Oliver says, unless there's anything just urgent, we should close.
Beings are numberless, I bow to say.